Hello and welcome to the Her Sport Six Nations show brought to you by Opal, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. Welcome back to a new episode of the Her Sport Six Nations show. This week we're going to be going straight into the recent article published by The Telegraph. So last week, the IRFU were likened to an old boys club after a damning investigation by Telegraph Sport uncovered an alarming amount of sexism towards its women's team. The Telegraph reported that at a president's dinner in Dublin last month, a prominent figure in Irish rugby said, "Who gives a fuck about women's rugby?" They alleged that there have been horror stories around team selection, with players being missed off emails or not even being told they've been dropped for a match. Players were also allegedly not properly consulted about the IRFU's decision to change the colour of the women's team shorts from white to navy. They also reported that the IRFU refused to explore the option of hybrid contracts. We had the IRFU come out and dispute the claims. Hannah, we had Greg McWilliams come out and say, you know, we don't know who this player was. He said they'll learn the ways of being a professional athlete, where it's really important. We always talk about what we're entitled to nothing and grateful for everything. Hannah, what is going on here? Surely it's not normal for a national team to, you know, week after week be kind of thrown into some sort of controversy. And this is just kind of the latest thing in a long list of problems that we're seeing within this Irish women's team.
Yeah, look, that article was a tough read by Fee Thomas. You know, and if all those allegations are true, it's a damning indictment of where women's rugby is in Ireland. And you know, look, it's a really tough read. I suppose there's so many different aspects to that article. There's so many claims around it. But like, if you start with the whole level of sexism, and to have somebody who is, you know, apparently a high ranking member or part of the IRFU saying something along the lines of "who gives a damn about women's rugby," you know, it's very indicative of, I suppose, the attitudes people have towards women's rugby. And it's not something that, you know, we need in the game right now. And women's rugby has been given a lot of spotlight, I suppose, over the last number of years. And more recently, the IRFU have been saying they're trying to support us. And we've seen that with, you know, the introduction of contracts and the move to the High Performance Centre at Navistown. But we also need to get people to support us and support women's rugby. And attitudes like that and comments like that. And, you know, as Lindsay Pete mentioned earlier on her own podcast, House of Rugby, you know, it wasn't the first time somebody's come to that. And unfortunately, it won't be the last. But we need more and more people to be on our side and go out and watch women's rugby and see the good aspects of it, because we need people to care about it. We need people to get behind it. And we're currently not in the best shape right now. And it's going to take time for this to improve and grow. But we just need support, and particularly people within the IRFU and particularly within men's rugby, to get behind us. Because if you look back to men's rugby when we went professional in the 90s, you know, Ireland wasn't a great team then either. They were collecting the wooden spoon. They were ended up last or second last in the pile for a number of years. And, you know, unfortunately, the women's team in this day and age are in a very similar position, or it's looking like it's going to be that way. And we're not going to have massive changes overnight, but we need people to get behind us and to support us and, you know, go from there.
And something that I thought was interesting, they said that players weren't being informed appropriately, you know, whether that was missing emails about team selection. Can you tell us, I suppose, what's the protocol when you were like a player in camp? You would obviously be told if you'd made the team, if you didn't. This is a player saying people were not being told and were surprised maybe when team announcements came out. What did you make of that whole element to this report?
Yeah, that aspect, you know, of the article was really disappointing, you know, because I suppose, look, I don't know what the setup is like now. I'm sure that there are protocols in place. Usually what happens is when a squad comes together, there's a leadership group appointed that usually involves captain, co-captain, a couple of more experienced and senior players. And they kind of chat with management and lay out a series of rules or standards, I suppose, you know, around certain things. And like one of those definitely would be regarding selection and communication around selection, because, you know, these players are giving so much and there's competition for places there. And, you know, they need to be informed so they can get their head around things for whether they're, you know, what their role is going to be for the weekend. And like thinking back, obviously, I had a couple of managers, like, but, you know, thinking back to the 2017 World Cup, the selection process was, you were told face to face, where basically you were kind of pulled aside by a manager previous to the official team announcement to the squad, and then obviously the press release with that. And you were basically told whether you were going to be starting or left out of the squad altogether, whether you're going to be on the bench. You know, and so particularly like if you were a player that had maybe started the week before or were in the 23 and then this weekend you were going to be left out of it altogether or put on high bench, as it's known, you were pulled aside and you were told, so that when that meeting came and it was announced in front of the squad, you knew that was coming and it wasn't a shock to the system. Because a big thing for those players, whether your role has changed from a starter to the bench or even just dropping out the 23 altogether, is you still are part of that squad as a whole and you still need to be there to be able to help your teammates prepare. And you, the whole idea around communicating that is, one, just a bit of respect, obviously, and hopefully you're getting a bit of advice to go, look, unfortunately, we found maybe you weren't training at your peak this week, or, you know, we thought you were a bit fatigued, or whatever the reason may be for your non-selection. And then hopefully you're given a bit of advice as to maybe how you could improve to get back into the squad. But also that time that you have between being told and the announcement to your squad, like, you're obviously going to be disappointed. So it gives you a bit of time for you to mentally prepare, be disappointed, but then be ready to help support your teammates who are going to be taking the pitch in order to do their job as best they can. Like, you know, and so for me, if the case is that they were left out of an email altogether or a selection process altogether and had to find out through an official announcement or through, which is worse, through the words from other teammates or whatever else, then that is incredibly frustrating, and that's not what we would expect of a professional team, you know. And just as we expect players to hold certain standards, we expect that of coaches and managers and the staff as well. And if that part of the article is true, that's a really, really hard thing. It's just really disappointing from my perspective, because it's about respect, and it shows a lack of respect. And look, it may have been a mistake and they were just left off it, but, you know, that's not good enough in my eyes, and that's something that needs to change. And it just seems to be there's just one thing after another that are just piling on to this, and there's so much negativity around the women's game. And I'm sure the players, you know, they're in the middle of a Six Nations tournament that's not going too well for them, and there's all this stuff off the pitch that now is in the back of their minds as well that they don't need right now. You know, they're having a tough time as it is on the pitch, and then they're coming off the pitch and there's all this media and negative press about women's rugby, and it's just really, really hard. And I'm sure the players are finding it really, really difficult. You know, and the Six Nations and playing for your country is meant to be this massive opportunity and kind of almost celebration, and we're not seeing much celebration of women's rugby right now in Ireland.
And the thing is, it's not even limited to Ireland, because we know, we've seen a tweet from Susie Appleby, the head coach over at Exeter, tweeting that the IRFU won't even answer my calls or messages. I feel the frustration of all those in a green shirt. Nicola Friday, the Irish captain, plays for Exeter. For their coach to not be able to get in contact with the IRFU, so surely something is amiss there. Something's not right, would you say?
Again, look, incredibly disappointing if true. You know, for women's rugby and rugby in general, like, communication is a massive thing on and off the pitch. You know, on the pitch, communication helps you to know your roles and help your teammates out so that we can all perform to the best of our ability. But as I mentioned, communication off the pitch is so, so important. Getting to know your teammates, being able to have that open and direct conversation between the coaching staff and players, selection processes. But, like, it seems like the IRFU is just like a closed community right now. And someone like Susie Appleby, head coach of a Premier 15s team where five Irish players are currently on the books, you know, some of which are currently included in the Six Nations squad, and others like Cliona Maloney, one of the best hookers in the English Premiership at the minute, who has been excluded based on form, is what we've been told. And like, to not be able to like even have an open conversation and discuss, like, maybe Susie Appleby wants to know or wants some advice as to how, you know, the likes of Laura Sheehan and Cliona Maloney can, you know, improve their game in order to be eligible or to be picked for selection for that Irish squad. She only has the best interests of her players at heart. And for that to come out, that there's no communication between, you know, that Premier 15s team and the RFU is just so frustrating from my point of view. And I'm outside the game at this point, so I can only imagine how the players feel about that.
And you could imagine for Nicola, she's probably getting a call on one side from Susie and then from the other side from Greg and from the IRFU. She's the one getting dragged out in front of the press week on week, and we've seen her get emotional. It must be a very difficult position. She's the captain, and her coach back in her club is saying she can't get in touch with anyone.
Absolutely. Like, and like, I'm sure she's not the only one. Like, she seems like she's kind of a middleman, almost caught between a rock and a hard place, and wants to do everything right for the RFU and trying to lead her country and the pressures that come with captaincy and everything else and poor performances. I'm sure she's feeling a bit of pressure now. And then obviously her own head coach comes out and says that she can't get in contact, and that's kind of almost added pressure from that regard. Like, and that's just one coach that's come out. Like, we have and numerous players playing right across the Premier 15s. Like, is that to say it's the same with all other coaches, or is there just something between Exeter and the RFU that's going on that we don't know about? But we need direct lines of communication from all sports. Like, we also have from all clubs. We also have Adele McMahon at Exeter at the minute. She's currently injured. So does that mean that, like, Susie Appleby may have information about her injury and her rehab that she wants to pass back on to the RFU, but that line of communication is also closed? It's just, I just don't really understand it. I don't see how that helps the women's game. We should be able to have discussions between head coaches and your national team. That can only be a good thing for the players, because at the end of the day, this is all about the players and their welfare and how to get the best out of them. And we're just shutting off an option there. And again, it's a sign of disrespect for me, because I don't think you'd see it in the men's game.
And another thing I thought was interesting, purely because we discussed it at the time, the issues surrounding the contracts. So the Telegraph reported that players requested more hybrid contracts, but the IRFU allegedly favoured a full-time or nothing attitude. Now, I know the contracts might be more part-time than full-time anyway in some cases, but what do you make of that? We questioned at the time, you know, how it was all going to work. And apparently players obviously were questioning this too, that it maybe wasn't going to be possible. The IRFU have obviously disputed these claims, but what did you make of that issue surrounding them?
Yeah, look, I spoke about this when the contracts first came out. You know, when you looked at the players who accepted contracts, and then you looked at players who were offered contracts but ultimately had to turn them down. And one of the players mentioned in that article was Katie O'Dwyer. She was one that turned down a contract, and she mentioned that basically the contract that she was offered, you know, was €15,000, and that for her wasn't feasible to live on. And I suppose the stipulation around these contracts within the RFU was that you had to move to Dublin, you know, and that you obviously had to be available for whenever they were due to set training. Katie O'Dwyer works in a high pressure environment, where she was obviously paid an awful lot more than what the RFU were offering her, and did not feel like she would be able to actually live on the contract that was offered to her, and therefore had to turn it down. But what we saw out of that then is those that that accepted contracts were players who were very inexperienced, mostly students, who, you know, were very glad to get a contract in the first place. And look, it's a fantastic opportunity for them, but we lost so much experience in our squad because of that. You know, and maybe in hindsight, looking back, it would have been a good idea to have these hybrid contracts, because we would have been able to keep on these experienced players, the likes of, as I mentioned, Katie O'Dwyer. You know, we could have had Hannah O'Connor on a contract, and the likes of Laura Feely. But we've lost that experience now, and we now are in this tournament where we are struggling because of our lack of depth and also because of our inexperience. And we talk about, you know, this being a team that is building from scratch, but I feel like this team has been building from scratch every year now for the last 3 or 4 years, and we're not actually moving up a little bit. We are stuck almost in the same place, starting over and over again each year. I hope that changes because of the introduction of professionalism, and this is the last time that we're starting again or we're starting a new journey. But I think it's just we missed a beat and we missed a trick there by not having these hybrid contracts to keep those experienced players in and help these younger players get up to the standard that is expected and required, you know, on and off the pitch, and get us to a place where we can really start building and improving year on year, as opposed to starting what feels like starting again.
And I thought it was interesting, Greg's comment that, you know, we don't know who this player is. He sort of said he was like, they could be new to the squad. Is he kind of, was he, from my perspective, I thought it was nearly hinting like they could be new to the squad. They'll learn the way it works and they'll learn to basically say nothing. Or what was he referencing there, do you think?
Yeah, look, obviously, I don't know what Greg is thinking. I can't read his mind. I don't really know Greg
personally. It would help a lot. It would help a lot for this tournament, I think.
To know what's going through his head. I suppose you have to remember that he is directly employed by the IRFU, you know, and he can't exactly come out and maybe say exactly what he would like to. And he has to be careful in that, because they are his employers. Look, I suppose when you look at it, and you, again, I bring up Cliona Maloney because she is one player who has spoken out in the past about the RFU and some of the issues that's going on. And while they mentioned that she hasn't been selected because of form, if you were to look at her and how she has played in the Premier 15s, she is currently starting for an Exeter team at hooker. She's the best hooker that is available to Ireland right now, and she is not being picked. And there is another player in that Exeter squad who is also a hooker and is playing for Ireland, and she's currently being selected in the Six Nations squad. So, you know, she spoke out and it seems like she's being punished for that and not being selected. And so, you know, there may be young players in that squad who are afraid to speak out for fear of the consequences, and because they are just starting in their career and they're afraid that, you know, if they speak out and say that stuff's not right, you know, that they might be selected again, and they don't feel like they can do that. And I already spoke about communication and how important direct and open lines about communication are. You have to be honest, you have to be able to speak out about these things and not have the fear of the reprimand that's coming, and doesn't seem like that's there at the minute within the setup, and that's unfortunate, you know. But I just, look, it's disappointing. I want to just talk about the rugby and everything and try and show that there have been little improvements here and there, but unfortunately there's too much stuff off pitch that's going on that's having a direct impact on women's rugby, and it's changing the attitudes of people, and they're really starting to look negatively on the RFU because of it. I want to just focus on the rugby, but like, you can't at the minute.
You were watching the Her Sport Six Nations show, brought to you in association with Opal, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. And is there an issue, do you think, with the way the IRFU have responded? I'm thinking back to even, you know, over a year ago where we seen over 60 players come out with an open letter. The IRFU immediately released a statement, you know, disputing all the claims. Then they went back on that. They done the review and everything like that. In this case, again, they've disputed all the claims. Could they have just said, you know, we're concerned by what this player has said and we'll kind of look into it, rather than come out and say like, oh, you know, we don't know what's going on, we don't agree? What do you think of the IRFU's reaction?
Yeah, I suppose they're trying to calm it down a little bit and make it look a little bit better than it was, and make it look a little less relevant, I suppose, and trying to get it focused back to the rugby. Look, again, Greg is trying to take the heat away from the RFU and from his players and get people focused back on the rugby, but that's hard to do at the minute. And like, they spoke about, you know, the whole aspect of the protein not being available to players prior to the summer series. You know, that is just basic stuff.
What would that look like now for protein not to be available in that HPC? Is it a case of you have to go get it? Is it being supplied? Maybe they don't know what to take. What would that actually look like from your perspective?
From when I was involved, and again, look, I've been out of the game and out of the setup a couple of years now, so it may have changed. But when I was involved, basically, if I had run out of supplements that I needed, I contacted you know, the like S&C or the nutritionist, whoever was available, and saying, look, I'm out of this, can I have some? And any time that I asked, it was given to me. So I don't know what went on there in the summer series. It seems like because it was off season, I wonder, was it made unavailable to them. But that's, for me, very silly, because off-season is the time when, you know, potentially you're at risk to maybe not be in the best shape of your life. And if somebody's requesting supplements to try and stay in good shape for coming into the preseason or wanting to improve as an athlete, then definitely should have been available. And I'm sure that, again, on the men's side, if that was asked, it would have been given. Again, can't speak for other nations, but I'm almost certain that, you know, in English rugby or French rugby, if they are asked for supplements, that it should be given to them. And it's something so basic, and I can't understand why it was denied. But, you know, if we want to talk about being a professional team and being this high level and elite thing, something as simple as protein and supplements should be given to players when needed and when necessary.
And I suppose then, to bring it back to the rugby, which is what we wanted to get back to, the recap of the most recent Irish game against Italy, you know, the closest scoreline we've seen in the Six Nations, but a case of we were nearly there, oh, we couldn't get over the line. But it wasn't just one time, it was numerous times. You know, is there an excuse at this time to say, yeah, you know, they played better, or should they be getting over that line and, you know, delivering those tries? What did you make of the game overall?
Look, I'm delighted we are finally able to talk about the rugby, because this is a game that I love and I love to watch, and I know that the girls out there are giving it everything to put in performances and be the best players they can be and try and improve this squad. Unfortunately, at the weekend, we didn't see a good performance from Ireland. You know, we were up against an Italy team who have been massively improving over the years, and they've managed to keep a cohort of those players together, much like that Wales team where... you know, they've a lot of experience in their squad as a whole, but particularly in their backline. Their number 13, Michaela Solari, their kicker, very, very experienced, but she got her 74th cap at the weekend, and it was more than Ireland's whole backline combined, you know, which is an incredible stat, just highlighting the inexperience of our squad that I've spoken about before. And kind of the experience they have. They also had Sophia Stefan, you know, I think it was cap 69 she got at the weekend. And they were able to bring on Sarah Baratine, who has 114 caps for Italy. Like, and just highlighting the experience they have. But this Italy team has improved over the years. They've managed to bring through some really, really good players, like Minuzzi, a fullback. And they've a number of players playing in the Premier 15s. You know, which is the best league for me, you know, in Europe anyway. And we need more Irish players playing there, unfortunately, as our standard in the AIL isn't good enough. But the performance from an Irish perspective, yes, there were some positives to look at. And yes, the scoreline, you know, wasn't as wide as we'd seen in other games. But It was disappointing, because, as you mentioned, we had so many opportunities to actually score tries from really good breaks and phases of play that we saw. But at the end of the day, we didn't get many points from it. And we are a team that have, you know, not scored many points at all this season. We scored 5 points in our first game against Wales, courtesy of a try by Nicola Friday. We got 3 points against France, courtesy of a penalty by Dana O'Brien. And then in the weekend gone, we got 7 points from a penalty try. And they're all the points that we have scored, you know, in 3 games so far. And that's a damning, I suppose, fact when you look at us trying to improve and show some of the more positive aspects of play. That while it's all well and good that we've had some really good rugby played, we can't execute and actually get something from it, you know. And that's something that we really need to look at, because we look at our next game against England, you know, the best attacking team in the world. If we can't score against the likes of Italy, or we're scoring very little against the likes of Italy, France and Wales, we're going to be up against it this weekend.
And does it go back to all the time that issue of experience? You know, at the weekend, lots of handling errors again, things that you wouldn't even want to see at provincial or like at a club level. We've seen lobbing the ball, people lobbing it around the field, like, What does that go back to? Like, that kind of basic play that you shouldn't really see in an international team.
No, absolutely. Inexperience can only be an excuse. And I don't use the word excuse lightly in that.
It's not their fault.
No, but at the weekend, what I was most disappointed in was actually our basic handling errors. You know, handling errors when we weren't under massive pressure. You know, we had one from a line out from Dana O'Brien. You know, just when we had turned Italy over and we kicked a touch, our line-out, which didn't function really well, went well. And then, you know, just a simple took, you know, Dana took her eye off the ball. And that's just basic focus. You can't, that's not an experience. That's just, you know, you took your head was out of the game for a little bit. Grace Moore knocked on the 5 metre line just at half time, you know, where we had a huge opportunity to score a try. We had some silly offloads being played. We had a couple of knock-ons in the backfield. Mm-hmm. You know, when you've plenty of time to think about these and what you're going to do. And it's almost like players take their eye off the ball or they're focusing on what they're going to do next, as opposed to catch first, then make your next move. And they're simple, simple stuff. Our passing wasn't good enough. What I was really disappointed about was actually our ruck height. So a number of times we either didn't get enough bodies into the ruck to secure our own ball, or when we did, it was lazy. We were practically standing up and inviting that pressure and that counter ruck from Italy, which they gladly took. And, you know, all of these are handling errors, our poor ruck height, you know, all those led to opportunities for Italy to attack and took away any momentum that we were starting to build. And, you know, that's not experience. That's just, you know, individual mistakes and individual lack of focus and attention to detail. You know, and I hope that that's something that Ireland have been focusing on this week, both as individuals and as a team, that collectively our ruck height was not good enough, but that our own, I suppose, focus and execution on the simple basic things was not good enough and needs to improve massively, or we'll be out for a really, really tough day against against England on Sunday. And, you know, even another aspect, our kicking, we missed touch a couple of times. Our handling in line-out wasn't good enough. Our throws in line-out wasn't good enough. They're basic skill execution that we need to work on. And that's not inexperience. That's just we need to go out and practice and we need to focus and execute.
And speaking of England, their game against Wales, 59-3. Disappointing result for Wales, do you think, given how well they've been doing this tournament?
Yeah, look, that game, the scoreline probably doesn't reflect particularly the first half of that game, because, you know, I was watching that game and Wales actually took the lead and were 3-0 up until about the 23rd minute. And it was almost like England were a little slow to get into the game, but Wales came out firing and they were, you know, explosive. They were really taking it to England. They were turning them over. They were first forcing knock-ons, but it was almost like England managed to weather the storm a little bit for that first 23, 24 minutes, and then they just clicked it into another gear and started to absolutely destroy that Welsh pack, you know. And it was a tough watch, because I was really impressed by Wales this year. I thought they'd been doing so well. And then it just shows you the level that England are at, that they are just another step up to be able to take this Welsh team that had been performing so well, withstand the pressure they put on, and then just demolish them. And the quality of players they were able to bring in, and you look at some of the players that they are missing, and it's frightening. Frightening that they were able to do that damage.
For Ireland, given the scoreline we've seen between Scotland and the Irish team as
well. Yeah, look, absolutely. Frightening for Ireland, frightening for any team, I think, that would come up against them, considering, like, you know, they were able to bring in Jess Breach last weekend, Abby Dow just having far too much fun. But, like, you look at that and, like, Claude McDonald wasn't even playing, and she'd been one of the best players for England in the tournament so far. They were able to not even miss her, you know, in the depth they have. They welcomed back Alex Matthews, who'd been out from injury. And, you know, the strength and the depth that they have to be able to be missing some top players in the world and have others just seamlessly slot in and not even realise you're missing these quality players is a scary prospect looking at it this weekend.
And then 55-0, the scoreline between France and Scotland. Another dominating performance from the French. What did you make of that game?
Yeah, look, France really turned it up a notch this weekend against Scotland. You know, Scotland had some really good aspects of play in the first two games, even against England. They scored a lovely try. You know, but France just absolutely took away every opportunity that Scotland gave, and they nullified them and snuffed them out. Their defence was phenomenal. And for me, I've mentioned her before, but Gabrielle Vernier, for me, is the best centre in the world right now. She can do it in attack. She just does the simple things. She's that linchpin for that French attack and defence. Attack, she just does the simple thing and passes it on for easy tries. She doesn't complicate things too much. She scores tries herself. But French have so much quality. They were able to welcome back, you know, Romain Ménager, you know, who's been out for a while there, and she slotted back in seamlessly. And again, Pauline Bourdain doing brilliantly there at nine, and Tremoulier started at 10 for them, showing off her class. And Scotland never really had an opportunity because France were just so dominant on both sides of the ball and really brought that physicality. And it's looking like Scotland and Ireland will face off in the last weekend of this tournament to see who will get the wooden spoon. And look, obviously, you know, the game's not gone yet against England, but it won't look good for Ireland. But that last game can have massive ramifications for both those teams because of what it might mean for the WXV tournament that's starting in September. And it will determine which tier Ireland will go into and therefore what opponents they will face in the next couple of years and the standards of that. And if we end up in tier three of WXV, we'll be playing against opponents who are ranked lower than us in the world and that aren't of the best quality, and therefore we don't really have much focus or scope to improve by playing against high quality ranked opposition, and we'll be stuck there for 3 years. Whereas if we maybe had made it into tier two or even tier one, which is unfortunately beyond us now, we'll at least be playing against high quality opponents and therefore, you know, at a standard which we know that we need to get to and can improve from. And yeah, that's disappointing. So that last game is going to be crucial for us.
Before we head into the final part of the show, we're going to be doing our Break It Down segment, where we give Hannah 60 seconds to explain rugby terminology. So Hannah, this week we're asking you to explain the role of the fly half or number 10.
Okay, yeah, so fly half or number 10 in rugby is a pivotal position. So they usually partnered with the scrum half or number 9, and the 9 and 10 are, you know, the two players in the team who are basically directing, you know, everyone else around the field. So the role of the 10 is kind of pull the strings and decide how, as a team, we are going to attack. You know, are we going to move it wide throughout the backs, or we're going to kind of punch it up the gut, you know, through our centres or with our forwards? And as someone who is a good 10 usually is good on all fronts of the ball. So they might be a good runner to try and stick that defence and let out our back three or our more exciting players. But they also will have really good vision and a decision to, you know, kick it in the backfield and keep defences guessing. And they're the ones who are usually unlocking defences and make those good decisions. And they're targeted because they're the orchestrator of the game. They're the ones who are usually targeted by defences, because you mess up a 10, you can really affect a different team's game plan.
Just over, but we'll give you that one.
Thanks.
So looking ahead then to the next weekend's games, Ireland and England. England are the best team in the Six Nations and have been for numerous years. Ireland are at the bottom of the Six Nations at the moment. What is that game going to look like? If you just had to put a scoreline before we even get into it, what are you expecting to see?
Look, I've mentioned this before, it's going to be a really tough weekend for Ireland. I'm sure the girls will go out and give everything they have, and they'll be going out with the belief that anything can happen on a rugby pitch. But there's no doubt in my mind that this is going to be nothing other than a very, very convincing win for England. I don't want to put a scoreline on it, but there has been, you know, talk from numerous people that this potentially could be a record defeat for Ireland. Do I want that to happen? Absolutely not. And I'd love nothing more than for Ireland to put up an almighty fight and actually come away with something. But my head says that this is going to be a wide margin win for England. They're just too strong. They have too much depth. They've world class players, and we're just not in a position to be able to compete with them right now. You know, I'll be down at Musgrave Park, and I really hope that we get an improved performance. But England are going to put so much pressure on us this weekend that, you know, it's going to be a really, really difficult day. And I think we'll only see glimpses of what Ireland can do, because they'll be nullified in every aspect.
And the last 2 weeks, we've seen a relatively unchanged team. Who would you like to see go out and play against England? What would your starting team look like?
I'll be surprised, to be honest, if we see many changes. Mainly because Greg has shown faith in a lot of the players we've had before. You know, I think that pack will more or less stay the same, depending on injuries. But I think we're very light in the centre partnership. To be honest, though, I don't know who to bring in there. Because, you know, that injury to Enya Breen has been really, really significant for us, and that we massively lack experience there. You know, Anna McGann only has a couple of caps, and Aoife Dalton, this is her first Six Nations campaign. And centres, you know, they're really the linchpin of our attack and defence and how we kind of play the game. And when you look at our 10, 11, 12, 13, and, you know, and our wingers were relatively inexperienced across the board there. And I don't even know who you'd bring in, to be honest. I can't see there being too many changes. I just think I would love to see someone like Jenny Murphy in there. She's not even in the squad, so she won't be. I know she won't be, but she's someone who we really need in that centre partnership to bring a bit of physicality and a bit of, like, I don't give a damn who we're playing, I'm going to run through a brick wall for you kind of thing, to help out that link between 10 and 13. But it's not going to happen. It's just something I'd love to see, because I thought she played really well in the Interpros and in the AIL this year. But I can't see there being many changes, if at all.
And then looking ahead to Scotland and Italy, a competitive game, would you imagine, given that they'll both be wanting the win there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is Scotland's chance to try and show that they can play some really good rugby. They're massively boosted by the return of Jade Conker-Roberts back from injury at number 8. She's been the best player that Scotland have produced in a very long time. It'll be interesting to see, do any of their sevens players return after coming back from Hong Kong, because they could be massively boosted by Lisa Thompson at 12 and Rona Lloyd on the wing. I doubt it'll happen, but if they are brought back in, they have a massive chance against Italy, because Rona Lloyd for me is a world-class player who'd get into most teams around the world. But Italy for me have far too much. They'll be massively buoyed by their results against Ireland. It's only the third time Italy have ever beaten us in, I think, 18 games. And so while they have a very experienced pack, that'll be a huge boost for them. And you could see that by the celebrations they had after the game last week. I think Italy will take this, but, you know, Scotland will be up for it. And the likes of Chloe Rowley, who's been playing really well for them at fullback, will be trying to do as much as she can for her team.
And one that I'm really looking forward to, France and Wales, because we've obviously seen that improvement on the Welsh side. And France, I think, would be a good test for them. We've seen them, I suppose, lose to England quite significantly. But France then are the next biggest competitors, would you say, for them?
Yeah, look, obviously Wales went into that England game full of confidence, you know, off the back of two wins and, you know, really thinking they could put it up to England. And look, they fell short by a large margin in the end. They'd be looking at France as another opportunity to show that they actually are good enough and they are the third best or even second best team in this competition. I don't think they'll win. I do think the margin will be a little bit closer, but they can't have the collapse that they did have in the second half against England. You know, they need to keep it tight for as long as possible and try and cut out that ball, get into that French backline where they can do a serious amount of damage. But their pack can certainly mix it with the best of them, and I can't wait to see how their front row goes against that French front row and how the Welsh back row stands up to the hugely talented and incredibly dominant French back row.
And round 4 of the Six Nations kicks off this weekend, but just to mention round 5, we kind of already looked a bit ahead to it, but reports have stated that ticket sales for the fixture between France and England at Twickenham have already surpassed 50,000 tickets. This smashes the record that we've seen at the World Cup. So obviously, while Ireland are facing difficulties in terms of its women's rugby setup, overall, the state of women's rugby is improving, would you say?
Yeah, look, Ireland aside, I think women's rugby as a whole is on a massive upward graph. You know, you look at women's rugby in New Zealand and the success of the Rugby World Cup there and the growth and the media spotlight it had. It was fantastic. Women's rugby has been fantastic. And, you know, all the success they've had over the last number of years and the number of ticket sales they're having at every game is massive. And they've been moving their rugby around the country to try and drive that support. They've got huge sponsorship and support behind them by the RFU. They've been professional for a number of years, and that's all coming to a head for them, and they're doing really, really well. And people are starting to see that women's rugby can be so exciting. There are so many world-class players with, you know, huge potential, young players coming through with incredible skill and talent, you know, and we're finally getting people realising that. And I hope that starts to move towards rugby, like women's rugby in Ireland, because we do have some incredible players and we do have some really, really talented players, and we just need to get some more positivity around them. But women's rugby as a whole is on a massive upward trajectory around the world, and I only hope that can continue and that Ireland gets sucked along with it.
And for people this weekend, what do you think is going to be the game of round four, the one to watch?
Wales-France, definitely. Again, France, we know, are an incredibly tough team to play, but Wales will be looking to see whether they can mix it with the best of them and show that, you know, that margin of defeat by England last week was a once-off, and that they had a bad day, basically, and that they can stick it to the French for 80 minutes.
And you can catch the France and Wales game at 3:15 on Sunday, the Ireland and England game at 2:15 this Saturday, and then 4:45 for Scotland and Italy. That's all from us today, and we'll catch you next week for a recap of this round's game and a preview for the week ahead.